You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romello, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. On Tuesday night, Miami entered a Game 4 against the Los Angeles Lakers in the NBA Finals, down 2-1. But there was some good news prior to the game, with various sources reporting that both Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic were looking to play in Game 4. Adebayo would return to Game 4 and start alongside the usual starting four, but Goran Dragic, unfortunately, was not able to participate in Game 4. Some footage of him in the Orlando bubble showed him trying to cut and defend at a high level. He said if he could play through the pain, he would. Unfortunately, it seemed like it was just too much. We have not heard from Goran specifically and probably won't for some time, but it seemed like he was just not able to fight through the pain in order to participate in the game. And it didn't seem to matter early on. The Heat looked very good, fantastic even, aggressive, a lot of energy, doing what they had done so effectively in Game 3 and in the second half of Game 4, constantly switching and rotating on defense, making things difficult for the Lakers' big two of Anthony Davis and LeBron James. They even built a 5-point lead, but they never looked quite dominant or built enough of a cushion in order to make a huge difference against a Lakers team that you know has some weapons that can obviously change the course of a game. They've got some high-potent scorers and enough role players there to make a difference. That's what you need a cushion for, but Miami just wasn't able to do that, and they weren't able to get their kind of shots that they normally do either. They shot pretty poorly overall from the field, just 43% or just under 43% overall and under 35% from three-point range, 11 of 32 overall. But they were still very much in the game for about 40-plus minutes, even tying things up at 83 minutes with about 6.5 minutes left to play. But from there, things kind of got out of hand. Either LeBron James was able to get to the line or get to the rim fairly easily, and then he was able to connect with a couple of cutters. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope actually hit a big three-pointer from the corner that seemed like a momentum shift for the Lakers and seemed to doom Miami's chances. He also cut to the rim for a two-point basket. Rajon Rondo was able to blow past Bam Adebayo from the perimeter and get a two-point field goal. And they just kept adding points, and Miami tried to shoot their way out of it. But unfortunately, some of those same shooting mistakes kept rearing up and key moments there. They were never able to get the opportunities that they had for most of the postseason to fall for them. And unfortunately, they wound up falling apart towards the end there for a final score of 102-96. It's probably a lot closer. Again, some of those shots were kind of at the buzzer or towards the end of the game when the Lakers had already taken their foot off their gas because they had a comfortable lead, a double-digit lead with about a minute left to play. And there was no chance of Miami coming back because things had been so difficult for them on the offensive end. Jimmy was probably the only player who looked like he could get his shot off at any point in time. Probably not a good thing because according to a lot of Heat Twitter, didn't seem like he was getting his shot off nearly as much as you would have liked. He probably was not as aggressive, something I'll talk a little bit about in the next segment. But to me, that wasn't quite the difference maker. Yes, you could have gotten probably a win if you had gotten the more aggressive version of Jimmy that we saw in Game 3. But that was a lot to ask for considering his incredible effort on the defensive end. Bam had a pretty huge game in his first game back. No signs of any kind of neck injury. He had 15 total points in 33 minutes of action, 6 of 8 from the floor. He was also able to get to the line 5 times to chip in, also 7 rebounds, an assist, and a steal. Perhaps not at 100%. That was pretty much obvious, but it didn't seem like he was also impaired in any way and was able to do some impressive things defensively and offensively, where he looked like he was comfortable with his shot, was aggressive in getting to the hoop, and very aggressive defensively, as you might expect. The starting lineup in total played a pretty solid game. This was the Duncan Robinson game that a lot of people had hoped for. He went 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 6 from three-point range, also chipped in 3 assists. So he had that passing game going that's been such a vital component if he's not knocking down his shots regularly. So he was very, very well balanced. Also got to the line 6 times, converted all 6 of his free throw attempts. So a 17-point game for Duncan, pretty good overall. And Tyler Hero, also in the starting lineup, finished 8 of 18 from the field for 21 points. I would say it was an up and down game for Tyler. Overall, 21 points, no laughing matter. But those shots were not always the most well advised. It's the kind of recurring thing that you expect out of a 20-year-old rookie that plays the way Tyler does. He takes some shots. Some of them you wish you could get back, and some of them you have to live with because the reality is that they'll fall on occasion. He had a high arcing floater in the lane over Anthony Davis that had no business falling, and yet it did. It went through the net, and you kind of take it for what it is, but he wish you could have taken a much better, more balanced shot, but that's what it is with Tyler. You know, you're going to get some of those crazy shots from him, and, you know, he played a solid overall game, a plus-minus of minus 13, so not solid perhaps, but it's just hard to tell with Tyler. You're never expecting him to be that difference maker. That performance he had against the Celtics, that was a whole different animal. Like, you know, you're going to get some good scoring from him. That's the strength of his game. Overall, I don't know if you want to live by what Tyler produces. I don't think he's the key necessarily to, you want to get him to contribute the way he did tonight, but you need more balanced scoring from others, because with Tyler, he's going to miss some bad shots. He's going to miss some good ones, and he's going to hit some bad ones too. So it's just all over the place with Tyler, and, you know, with 7 rebounds, 3 assists, a good overall game for him. So there's not much you can really take away from that. And the problem, however, was, in my opinion, the bench. A total of just 13 points on 3 players. So Eric Spoelstra continuing to tighten up his rotation without Goran Dragic. Myers Leonard, who had started the previous 2 games, did not play at all. Solomon Hill, who had gotten some spot minutes here and there, also did not play. The Leonard decision was pretty obvious considering Bam's return and also the fact that Dwight Howard is no longer the factor that he was earlier in the playoffs or even earlier in the series. He played 8 total minutes, took 1 field goal attempt and didn't score, also contributed 2 rebounds, but he didn't even get playing time beyond the first quarter. In the third quarter, Frank Vogel actually went with Markieff Morris as the starter there for the third, and he wound up playing a total 30 minutes. Not quite random scrub heap killer status, because he didn't really have a huge game, 9 points, but he hit a couple of back-breaking threes. He even got to the free throw line on a strange foul call that should not have been a call. I don't think it was a foul, first and foremost. He went up and down, and Kelly Olynyk was in his airspace, and it didn't seem like there was a call. I didn't think there was a foul on that, but he got the foul call anyway, was able to convert all three free throw attempts. Finished with 9 points, as I said, and just a solid game for him, I guess. Kyle Kuzma continues to be a thorn in Miami's side. 3 of 6 for the field, 9 points for him. Rajon Rondo got 2 points, and Alex Caruso, what can you say about him? 7 points, so a good production from their bench, and I think that was the difference, because Miami just could not get any kind of consistent shooting from Olynyk, Andre Iguodala, or Kendrick Nunn, who wound up playing 26 minutes. Andre, look, he hit a three-pointer. He goes in there at the small center lineup. He goes and switches. He covers Anthony Davis. He covers LeBron on occasion. He shifts. He moves. He does the things that he does and tries to find open shooters and make the right pass on occasion. But clearly, he's not at 100%. I don't know if it's just age. I don't know if this is just injury kind of taking its toll at this point in the season. But either way, not a huge game, not a great game for him. I think the difference really was none. And I think that was something a lot of Heat Twitter feel strongly about, that he was just problematic. And look, 26 minutes for Kendrick, 2 of 11 from the floor, 2 of 6 from three-point range. So looking to get his shot going, but more often than not, taking really bad shots. It's like there's a difference between him and Tyler Hero, in that Tyler can take bad shots, but you know he's going to make up for it at some point, and it's all going to balance out. With Kendrick, it rarely does. Especially at this point. Maybe earlier in the season, when he wasn't expected to carry the brunt of the scoring load as much, maybe he would have, you know, been able to round into form eventually, or would have just kind of balanced out by the end of the game. But that wasn't the case in Game 4. Just 2 of 11, and it's just taking shots in traffic, taking bad shots at the rim, challenging Anthony Davis, getting his shot blocked on occasion, and he's not doing much else. He's not going to make plays for others. No assists from him. He's not going to play defense, although I did see him go under screens and try and challenge Rajon Rondo on occasion. So he's getting playing time because there aren't any other options. You don't have any other ball handlers on the roster with Goran out. And that's part of the problem with this lineup is that you've got Bam, who can bring the ball up and initiate offense. You've got Tyler, you've got Jimmy, and you have Goran, but you don't have him in game four, so you've got to play somebody. And unfortunately, it fell on Kendrick Nunn, who probably shot Miami out of the game on more than one occasion. So a tough game, not a good way to wrap up the game after a strong showing in game three, where you thought they might be able to capitalize and build some momentum. And as I said over the last couple of days on various podcasts, game four to me was crucial for Miami because it dictates so much of what happens moving forward. If you can steal game four, if you had won that game, you get momentum back in your side. Maybe you get Goran back for game five on Friday. And even if you don't, you've already proven that you can win without him. Now, all that matters is a Herculean effort from Jimmy Butler in game three. And that was the only difference. That was the only reason why you win that game. Other than that, I'm not sure if maybe you might get completely swept. That's what it looks like. Without a historic performance from Butler, maybe there's no chance for Miami to win anything in this series. And that's kind of unfortunate considering that even now, I still think Miami had a very good chance of knocking off the Lakers. I feel less confidently about that today. I'll be 100% honest with you. I'm not sure that they have a chance of evening things up. I certainly don't think that they can win three straight games against a Lakers team that, in all honesty, does look pretty good. I don't think that they're better than Miami. If Miami had been healthy, I still like Miami's chances of knocking off the Lakers. But unfortunately, that is not the case. Now, as for Butler, it's worth talking about whether or not he wasn't aggressive enough. And was he the reason why they lost game four? I'll answer that next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. With an ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible to stock all the parts you might need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure pointless or intimidating questioning while the person behind the counter orders the parts you're looking for on their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to carry? You've got computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business serving auto parts customers online for two decades. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy-to-use site, and you'll get everything you need with just a few clicks delivered directly to your door. Why would you spend more for the exact same parts at a chain store or even worse, at a car dealership? RockAuto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Then go to their How Did You Hear About Us section and enter Locked On so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. It seems like Jimmy Butler is as big a point of contention as you can possibly get following game four. And it's rather unfortunate because this is probably unfair. I think you saw what he was able to do in game three, and it provided such a boost, an inspirational one to me, I think. And I thought following that performance, I really did like Miami's chances in game four, and I really thought that they had a good chance of stealing that momentum, as I mentioned before. But Jimmy was not that kind of player today. He wound up having a solid game, plus minus of minus 11. Doesn't reflect that necessarily. 22 points overall, 8 of 17 from the floor, 6 of 7 from the line. And I think that's a part of it right there. He's won only 17 field goal attempts, not connecting those perhaps as efficiently as he was, as historically good as he was in game three, and taking some shots from behind the arc, including one late in the game that I wish he had not taken, and was a huge difference because it was a missed three on one end from Jimmy and then a made three on the other end, and that seemed like it was a huge swing again in the Lakers' favor. And also those seven free throw attempts, that's not Butler-esque. That's not the kind of version of Butler that we've seen for most of the season when he was able to control the tempo, get to the line, and be able to slow the pace down to reflect Miami's preferred style of play. Now, he also added 10 rebounds and 9 assists, so he was shy in assist of a triple-double. He also added 3 steals and a block. He'll tell you none of that statistical production matters considering the fact that they lost anyway and now that their season is dangerously close to an end. But again, the big overall take was that he wasn't aggressive enough. And it's hard for me to say because I think I have a pretty realistic gauge of what kind of a player Jimmy is, having watched him throughout his career and knowing for a long time that he was a great fit in Miami and thinking that he'd be perfect here. He's been as great as you could expect in 1 year as far as providing leadership, production on the floor, camaraderie off of it. He's fit in perfectly. He's adopted the culture and embodied it as well as anybody has over the last 25 years of Pat Riley's tenure in Miami. And so to me, I always was aware that you're never going to get 30-point gains from Jimmy. That's not who he is. And maybe it can be, as it was in Game 3, but I don't know that expecting that 100% of the time, or even in these dire situations, is realistic. I think it's fool's gold. And I think it sucks to say that, because I know that a lot of you tie your appreciation of a player from having the big shot in big moments and having them come up in key stretches and win the game for you the way that he did in Game 3. But that's just never been his strength. And maybe, again, maybe it should be. But I also think that if, you know, he may, obviously, 9 assists, he was looking to get everybody going. And I think a big part of that was him perhaps deferring on occasion, probably on occasions that he shouldn't. And it's funny, because now in hindsight, we could say, well, he should have been more aggressive. But let's say Kendrick hits 3 or 4 of those shots that he took, where he still finishes 5 or 6 of 11 from his total field goal attempts. That's the game. That's the game for Miami. Miami wins a narrow one, perhaps, but they win that game if he was able to connect in those. And I know that Jimmy was looking to get him going early and often. And I think you could make the same case for Tyler. Tyler hits one more shot, finishes 9 of 18, 50%. Not a huge stretch for him. Miami wins it comfortably. If Jay knocks down another three-pointer, he finished 2 of 7. All of his attempts coming from behind the arc. If he hits just 3 of 7, again, not a huge stretch considering the version of Crowder that we've seen throughout the playoffs. The Heat win this comfortably, but instead they lose. The criticism falls on Jimmy's shoulders, and it's rather unfortunate. And here is where I get into some kind of tricky and unfortunate areas of thinking here, is that part of the problem with Jimmy, or at least the perception of what Jimmy was prior to joining Miami, is that he expected a lot of things out of his teammates. He was always pushing them. And while I think a lot of those conversations have been squashed this season because he's found a bunch of players of like mind in this locker room, I also think he was doing the right thing. I think he was trying to get them going, and they let him down. I wouldn't be surprised if Jimmy was a little disappointed in some of the guys in this roster for not stepping up in key situations, for, you know, guys like Kelly Olynyk to have an inconsistent game where he scored only 4 points after he was such a huge offensive factor in Game 3. And I know a lot of that has to do with his minutes, but he probably gets more minutes if he's able to knock down those shots, if he's more aggressive and consistent in knocking down whatever opportunities he has. Unfortunately, he goes 1 of 4 instead, and I understand why Spoelstra only played him 12 minutes. He's also a defensive liability. That's something that's been a concern, and he had some good energy in moments, but not enough. For 12 minutes of play, I'd say he probably played well for 2 of those. So if you're Jimmy Butler, why wouldn't you be frustrated at some of the problems that you saw from your teammates? Why wouldn't you expect more from Olynyk and Nunn and even Tyler and Duncan? Those guys might have had good games, at least Robinson and Hero, but other than that, it's just not enough production, and it cost Miami a chance to even up the series and steal that momentum. So I know Jimmy won't say that. I don't think he necessarily is going to come away with any negative feelings about his teammates. I think it feeds too many of those pre-existing narratives that have dogged him and defined him for so long. But at the same time, I can understand why he'd be a little frustrated. And it's unfortunate, because I do think he did enough. I think this is a version of Jimmy that we've seen consistently throughout the playoffs. But the other guy who has shown as much dog, as much spirit as Jimmy has throughout the playoffs is Goran Dragic, and he's not there, and he's not available, and he probably won't be. Now, the Heat have 3 days off before they reconvene on Friday for Game 5, and I imagine Goran will once again try to play. If he shows any progress, if he continues to get treatments over the next couple of days, and he's able to fight through pain, he's going to be experiencing pain. But if he's able to get through it and play and be a solid force, he'll find a way to get on the floor, because it's just too big an opportunity for him. Even at this point, with Miami unlikely to win the series and maybe even unlikely to win another game, he's going to try to find a way on the court, because he's just too much of a competitor, and you never get these opportunities, or you rarely get them, and you want to take advantage and be out there. But Goran has been one of those fierce competitors, willing to do whatever is necessary. We saw that throughout the playoffs, that he's just He's Miami's leading scorer for so much of it. And a lot of that has to do with his aggressiveness, his competitiveness, his fire. Everything that we've loved about Goran Dragic over the past few years seems to have magnified during the playoff run. And unfortunately, without him there, nobody's able to match Jimmy's intensity. And that's not a knock on Bam Adebayo. I think, again, like Jimmy, Adebayo is not a guy who's going to be putting up a lot of points. He's not that kind of center, and he's not that kind of player just yet. He can be at some point, but without a consistent outside shot, it's just not his strength. You're not going to rely on him for 20-plus points a game. And so it's a great way of building a team of consistent, solid, all-around players that try their best and work hard and will outwork their opponents. You've got guys like Jimmy and Bam and Goran and everybody else on this roster who contributes and plays hard, but you still need somebody to go to for easy scoring, and you don't have that on the roster. Even Jimmy, as good as he is, unless he's being super aggressive and constantly going and attacking the basket, which he did not do, you're just not going to find those points very easily. And that was something that I was concerned with early on. As I'm watching this, I'm watching that energy, and it was fantastic. Again, I can't reiterate enough how good that energy was early on when they were switching and rotating on everything defensively. And then somehow he can't keep that energy output going. It's just not sustainable. It's not realistic to think that you can do that for 48 minutes. And as conditioned and deep as Miami's team is, you're going to need a boost from somebody. I kept wondering who that third scorer was going to be. And you got some production from Robinson and Hero. Again, 38 combined points. Not a bad showing from them. But some of those shots they were taking, again, just not being able to capitalize in key moments when it was a necessary basket, a potential shift in momentum in Miami's favor, and it never really seemed to tie all together the way it had in Game 3. And then to get the kind of lack of production from the bench was just brutal. I think an absolute backbreaker. Can't get past it. I'm sorry. That's just, to me, that's the big takeaway, is that you can criticize Jimmy, perhaps. Maybe he should have taken 25 shots and tried to be a little bit more aggressive. But considering everything he's doing in the defensive end, going up against LeBron and Anthony Davis and even Dwight at some points, he guarded everybody. He's constantly moving and rotating. He's doing so much. And for him to be able to still put up 22 points on solid shooting numbers, I don't think it fault lies on him. I really don't. And I can't blame any of the other starters, even though Tyler was a little bit more inconsistent. But again, that's just the nature of who he is as a 20-year-old rookie who's aggressive with his shot and takes some crazy shots on more than one occasion throughout a game. It's just that bench, nobody produced. If you get one more basket from Kelly Olynyk, you get three or four more baskets from Kendrick Nunn, it's a different ballgame. Miami wins it easily. They're tied 2-2. Maybe you get Goran back for Game 5, and then all of a sudden, I think you have the ability to win two of those games against the Lakers, despite their top-end talent, despite some of their role players stepping up. But I'll talk a little bit more about what happens next, because that's all we have right now. Is does Miami have a realistic chance, even now, at winning the series? I'll get into it in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Look, you don't really want to talk about it, but something that we should talk about is erectile dysfunction. It's not easy, and usually men will just brush it off or blame themselves or avoid talking about it altogether. But Roman makes it easy and comfortable to talk about with a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication's appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is so easy and discreet, you'll wish you had done it sooner. You can just stop feeling uncomfortable and get started by completing an online visit. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNBA. A reminder that you can continue to get my coverage of the NBA Finals by subscribing to this podcast, or you can reach me via email at Locked On Heat if you've got questions or concerns at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. This isn't easy for me. I'll be 100% honest with you. I'm at a point now, and I apologize for that, because there's a part of me that feels very strongly that in my role as somebody who talks about and writes about basketball professionally, that perhaps I should be a little less biased or emotionally invested in the outcome of the game. But I've mentioned many, many times, and perhaps I shouldn't, but I've really enjoyed this season, and I've enjoyed covering this team and watching these players work together and form friendships and see how they've grown and evolved. And with everything that's gone on in our lives outside of basketball, from the diagnosis of COVID-19 to a hiatus that stopped the season for several months, to the building of the bubble and the unrealistic expectations that the season would commence, and for Miami not just to be a part of this bubble scenario, but to thrive in it, to be able to go as deep into playoffs as they have, it's been a hell of a ride, and I can't get away from that. But it also strikes me, particularly if you had not heard my conversation with Locked On Lakers host Anthony Irwin, is that some people are already looking ahead to next season. And I think that's a realistic expectation, considering that even if Miami's able to stretch the series out to 7 games, the next season, the 2020-21 season, will commence very soon. You're going to have the draft coming up. You're going to have free agency. You're going to have all these different things under a very rushed schedule before we start to know exactly when training camp opens and all those things. But it's going to happen quickly. Look, we're in early October, and we're still talking about the NBA Finals. This is unprecedented. I don't need to rehash that because I'm pretty sure you're all aware of how unusual these circumstances are. But it is very, very different. And so an eye to the future is probably advisable. But I can't really get there just yet. For me, I'm still focused on this series. And part of that comes with trying to see whether or not they have a chance here. I don't know. I really don't know, because Miami's never been in this situation. Not this team, not this season. They've never been with their backs against the wall here. Yes, they experienced challenges from the Bucks, where you thought maybe they would steal momentum. And you even lost 2 games to the Celtics after stealing, you know, or winning the 3 of the first 5 games. And so they never were down in a series like this. 3-1. It's almost an insurmountable task for them. And they could get another boost from Goran emotionally, the way they did from Bam in Game 4. It could be a difference. And then all of a sudden, perhaps you steal Game 5, and now you're talking about a 3-2 series, and maybe you have more of a chance there. But you also have to count on LeBron James, who is LeBron James. And we've seen it up close, unfortunately. We know that he can be a pretty dominant force when he's engaged and tastes blood. When there's blood in the water, he's very shark-like, as you all know. And I think that's a concern. And also, from Miami's perspective, Eric Spoelstra, post-game, said that, you know, his guys are going to be ready. You know, this team is going to be ready to challenge the Lakers in Game 5. And hopefully that is the case. But it also takes so much out of you. And you're talking about the situation in the bubble where it's such an emotional drain. And they've been here for 3 months. And they just want to get home to see their families in person, to be able to hug people and love those closest to them. I mean, I know I would be a mess without being able to talk to my kids and my wife for 3 months, and a lot like these players are. And so if Miami comes in energized to start Game 5 and they're able to, you know, build a little lead the way they did in Game 4, and they're able to look engaged, energetic, playing defense the way that they do, you know they're not going to quit necessarily. But when and if the Lakers respond, as you know they will, because they've got LeBron, because they've got talent, because officiating tenses come in there and undercut any advancement that the Heat make, then will the Heat just roll over and die? I mean, we've seen that before. We saw it from the Celtics even. We've seen it from other teams. It's just hard to continue to fight and fight when you know this challenge is so difficult. And I have concerns about whether or not Miami is going to be able to respond for a full 48 minutes in Game 5. They're going to be fighting their hardest. They're going to try to steal the game early. They're going to try to, you know, impact the game and control the pace and again, have a hold on the whole feel of the game. So in the hope that they'll be able to win it and maybe they can build a little more confidence. But that's another part too, is that, you know, in thinking about this, you know, one of the things that really stuck out to me is Jimmy saying after Game 3, after his huge performance, "Now we know we can be here." That's a quote from him. "Now we know we belong." And it makes you wonder, at least it makes me wonder, did they ever have doubts before? Because we've heard so consistently from so many of their players that, yes, they belong here. Yes, they knew they could win, etc. And it just really hasn't seemed that way. And maybe, again, injuries have taken a lot of the wind out of their emotional sails. Game one was an absolute fluke to me because I know Lakers fans will say, well, you had Bam and Goran in there anyway, so it didn't really matter if they're injured or not. But as I've pointed out many times, Bam picked up those two early fouls in game one. Goran wasn't 100% at any point in time. And then once you take those two out of the equation, you're not quite sure how to respond to the Lakers' daunting size. And we've seen Miami come back from runs before. They've figured out the Lakers' equation. I'll be 100% honest with you. Yeah, they lost game four. Yeah, they lost game two, but something shifted in the way that they've altered their defense. They're not going to the zone at all anymore. They didn't in game four at all. They figured out how to rotate, how to make things difficult. They've taken LeBron James and Anthony Davis out of the equation. When you think about that, think about the fact that you have two MVP-type candidates in Davis and James, and they combined for 50 points, 28 from LeBron, and mostly because he got a lot of bullshit free throw calls and went 10 of 12 from the line. Absolute horseshit. And I apologize for my cursing here, but a lot of those calls were so damned ridiculous. And it's LeBron. You live with it. You did for 4 years when he was in Miami. But damn it, it's just on the opposing end, it's difficult to witness him getting those calls so often and so frequently. And then there's also the moments where, because he is 6'8" and 270 pounds of solid muscle, he'll get to the rim and he'll put up a crazy circus shot and draw contact in the process and get the and one. And that's a backbreaker. And it's just, you know, it's difficult. I think they've really done a phenomenal job of mitigating Anthony Davis. Like, there is no chance of him getting the finals MVP after what looked like a dominant performance from him in games one and two. He just hasn't been that player. 22 games, but a lot of that's empty goddamn calories, I'll be honest with you. I've never seen anybody at 7 feet tall with a 10-foot wingspan with all the athletic tools he has have so many empty points or preening after a dunk over nobody. Like, you're 7 feet tall. You should be able to dunk the ball over an empty space there. Congratulations to you. Now go and take that unibrow somewhere else. I am Anthony Davis, to me, will never be an MVP. He'll never be. He's a great player who's good for 82 games, even good in the playoffs, but he's not a momentum-changing superstar. Not to me. Like, I just don't see it. LeBron, even at age 30, whatever, is still capable of shifting moments in a game in his team's favor. I'd say the same for Jimmy, even, again, despite the fact that you're not going to get a lot of production on the scoring end from him. I think he is capable of that. Anthony Davis, he's just not aggressive. He lives at the whim of LeBron James. LeBron is dictating when and how Anthony Davis gets his points because Davis just is still not capable of creating shots on his own. I've lost my train of thought here. I'm pissed off and rambling and depressed because, honestly, I thought that they'd have a chance in game four and it didn't pan out that way. So I apologize for that as well. But the reality is that perhaps it's time to look forward. And a lot of you have suggested that it's time to consider what's going to happen next season. How do you build this team? Maybe you should be more optimistic and that they've always exceeded expectations up to this point and that anything that happens in the finals was just a cherry on top or gravy and not really indicative of how their future will be, because it is a bright one, because you do have an all-star in Bam Adebayo and a future all-star in Tyler Herro and a historically good shooter in Duncan Robinson and so on and so forth. You can add another superstar to this core and probably make a finals run next year, even as other teams in the Eastern Conference will continue to get better. But you never count on that. That seems defeatist to me. It sounds a little bit like the whole premise behind tanking. Yeah, there's a bright future ahead of you if you're willing to tank now, but I'm not willing to look past this series and what's happened. And to me, I will constantly go back to the fact that I think Miami should have won this series if they had been healthy. And I know that's a huge what if, and you'll never go back, and there's no way of knowing for sure. But I still also think that they have a chance of stealing game five and perhaps pulling off a historic upset. I know I'm probably setting myself up for failure, and you probably don't even want to hear that, but what recourse do I have? I don't want to look ahead just yet. I'm not ready to start caring about Vernon Carey Jr. and where he's going to fit in the NBA draft, because honestly, I don't give a damn about the draft on normal occasions. I certainly don't care about it following this season when we have no idea what's going to happen next year at all. So the draft means very little. Free agency is far away. Who knows what moves Miami and Pat Riley will make? You know they're going to try and tweak the roster at some point, and they're probably going to be positive changes. But right now, dealing with Goran's injury, which has taken a lot of the my whole drive about this series, because I am upset at not being able to see Goran compete at a high level considering everything he's gone through over the last 5 years. I'm also still focused on this series and hoping that Miami will find a way to win game five. And if that's the case, at least they'll get the respect they deserve. Because right now, honestly, they're being trashed. Like, yeah, they're a tough team maybe. Or yeah, they've got a gritty player in Jimmy Butler. But there's still a lot of people. And I don't mean just Lakers elitists fans. I think media in general are kind of saying, well, there's this narrative about Miami being like the little engine that could, the little gritty, tough underdog that is scrappy and fun and all this bullshit. And I think it's dismissive. I think it's reductive. And I think it's untrue, to be honest with you, considering what I've seen from this team, what you all have seen from them throughout the course of the season and in the playoffs. We know, and in our heart of hearts, that this team can compete with anybody. And I really believe that. You miss an all-star for three games practically, because Bam only played for one half in game one. He wasn't in there for games two or three, and he was just coming back into form in game four. And without him as your driving engine on both offense and defense, it's just hard to find any way of winning. You're telling me that Bam plays in game two and Miami doesn't find a way to win that? I believe it. I honestly believe that they would have absolutely won that game. And now all of a sudden, maybe, yeah, you're down two games to one, or maybe you're up two games to two or three games to one. Who knows? A lot of the momentum could have shifted very differently if injuries hadn't robbed us of seeing this team at its full capacity the way we have over the whole entirety of the Orlando bubble. So it's unfortunate. I'm rambling a little bit here, and I apologize for that. It's a difficult moment trying to recap this game. I'm going to continue to cover the finals as best I can, and hopefully I'll get some guests to help me break down the series and what we've seen up to this point. And make sure that, of course, you always stay locked on to this show by subscribing to it and leaving a review whenever possible. I do appreciate those, because I think it does help a lot of people, especially now when there is some added attention to the podcast because the Heat are playing as well as you can possibly expect them to, and they're in the NBA Finals. So leave a review. Let me know what you think. And you can always reach out to me via email or Twitter. I'm responsive as best of my ability. And hopefully you'll be able to stick around for the ride after the season, whenever that might be. But for now, let's focus on the NBA Finals. Let's focus on Game 5 and hopefully making this a tighter series than it really is. Thank you so much for listening. I'm David Ramil signing off. And thanking you, as always, for your support.